Alright, time for another DoNotGod.com video presentation. Just a presentation, yes. Just too underproduced. So, I'm going to play some more Conundrum. No, that's not it. It's Blithering Genius. Yeah, same difference, really. And the argument is, kind of ridiculous from my perspective. He needs it proven to him, okay, that the fact is that our sensations are on a continuum, and that the continuum has a side, a good side and a bad side, that I can, okay, assign sensations a positive or negative value. And I'm not assigning it based on some prejudice I have against the sensation. I'm not assigning it because of some culture I came from. I'm not assigning it for any reason except what it smells like, so to speak, what it tastes like, what it feels like. And some sensations feel like shit, crap, bad, horror, and some not so bad, even good. And that's a fact. It's not something I'm making up. It's something I'm observing. And yes, I can't take my feelings and put them on the table. I can't put them through the internet and you can smell them and taste them and, say, ooh, yeah, I don't like that sensation either. I don't like that feeling. I don't want to feel that way. I can't do that. But the fact is that we do have common experiences. In the sense that if I say I have a headache, or I say I have a broken leg, or I say I have the flu, or whatever, we have some, generally speaking, common experiences with these events, and what it feels like, and we assign the same value to it. So it really shouldn't be an argument among reasonable people. Feelings can be reasonably categorized as positive and negative, as profit versus loss, as good and bad. They have value. That's their nature. They don't do anything else but scream a kind of value. They either feeling good screams feeling good. And feeling bad screams feeling bad, and it doesn't do anything else. The nuance is so irrelevant. It's the goodness or the badness that's the only thing that's relevant, meaningful. It catches your attention. All right, having said that, so this is some 4-hour pile of crap he made. 5-hour pile of crap. I'm not going to play the whole thing. So far, he's just complaining that somehow he doesn't think I am addressing the argument, whatever the argument would be. Now, I think his argument is something to do with this subjective word, that somehow because we individually experience it, therefore we can't have an objective perspective. But there's no way around that, frankly. Again, feelings can only be experienced individually, and we can only collectively agree in describing things that create symptoms of feelings. So we can put things in a category and say, yes, that produces feelings that are very unpleasant and negative, and things that we would rationally prevent happening if we could prevent it from happening. I don't think the argument has to be any bigger than that. There is value in the universe, and the value is in the feeling organism's sensations. Sensations have value. This little ring, no, it's nice. It can make people go, ha ha, or it can be appealing in some way, and they go, ooh. So it can cause a feeling thing to have a reaction. And the reaction can have value, but this in itself can't have any. All right. in and of itself, it is not producing any qualia, you know, any state of personal being. And it is the state of something, a being that can feel. It's feeling state that matters. Something is bad because it causes a feeling organism to have a bad experience. It's really that simple. And he wants to make it much more complicated.
Map to the nihilist puppet, right? He has a number of these puppets in his brain, and I'm the nihilist. And, you know, the way people...
I don't know if he's going to... Are you going to say something to un-nihilist yourself? I mean, you're saying there's no core or no elemental value. You're saying that it really doesn't matter what a person or a human feels, except when you subjectively decide it's good or bad, you personally. But you're saying that there's no reasoning or logic applied to our assignment of good or bad feelings. And I'm telling you, frankly, no, of course I'm reasonably assigning the negatives. I'm not prejudiced against bad feelings. They're bad. That's just the way they are. I'm sorry. They're just not any fun. It's just a fact. They're party poopers.
Typically use the word nihilist is just to dismiss someone who doesn't accept their core assignment.
No, it's just to simplify an argument. You're just saying, let's put them in a category, okay? I mean, God botherer is a way of, you know, pointing out that, okay, this is a person who really doesn't care about physical evidence, and he doesn't really care if the theory is wacky as shit, you know, like the God... They believe in a God who blames the children for the sins of the parent. You know, where somebody reasonable would say, how the fuck do you do that? I mean, how does that ever make any ethical sense? The kid's not responsible. The kid didn't make the parents. It's the other way around. You know, parents are responsible for kids. Kids aren't responsible for parents.
Assumptions. So to a religious person, an atheist is a nihilist.
Well, that's just silly. So that's just proving that religious people, if that's what your tendency to see is, I don't see all that. I don't see that happening. I don't see religious people saying that atheism makes you incapable of having any moral or ethical guideposts. They're just saying they don't have as many guideposts. I mean, they don't really care about this whole marriage thing and this and that, and all these little rules. And they have some more open opinion that, no, if you fall out of love, then the good thing to do is go find somebody else. I mean, you know, they're not sitting there saying, you know, force the train wreck, you know, that kind of thing. They're just applying a looser and less dogmatic sense of morality. So where religious people thinks it's okay to torture animals and eat them, you know, somebody not religious would say that's cruel and evil. So they don't have any moral high ground. They just have a moral dogmatic ground, a bunch of edicts that aren't terribly rational, like punish children for the sins of the parent.
Because the atheist doesn't accept the core assumption that God exists, right? Which is so fundamental to the worldview of the religious person that they can't imagine...
I don't know what all this is in this video for. I mean, obviously, my channel is called DoNotGod.com. I mean, I clearly have no respect for religious thinkers. I'm clearly stating I think they're all enemies of intelligence because they violate all the rules of logic and have basically turned their brain into shit because they want to believe in a fairy tale world of gingerbread and, you know, melted sugar.
Believing in anything. If you don't believe in God, you don't believe in anything. So they would call an atheist a nihilist.
All right, so what? Get to the point. So you're saying I can't call you a nihilist because you do believe in something. Now, okay, so what's the big something you believe in? What do you think the elemental source of value in the universe is? Your personal welfare, you know, if it's good for you, it's good for the universe.
Or claim that by rejecting the belief in God, that the atheist must reject that belief in anything, because it seems that way.
Okay, I'm just going to jump a little bit ahead and see if it gets to this point about explaining how the nihilist is being unfairly pigeonholed.
You consciously experience them, that your consciousness is the origin of them.
Yeah, and Menem thinks his argument is just an appeal to direct experience.
Oh, you know, which isn't a crazy thing to appeal to. I mean, my eyesight works, my hearing works, my whole brain is configured to keep me out of trouble, to solve problems, not to make problems. I mean, that's why we have this intelligence and these senses, is to navigate correctly, not to navigate incorrectly. You're saying that somehow I've been completely duped, okay, and I have misunderstood that it's actually fun to have a nail in my eye. No, I haven't been duped.
And he thinks because we experience pain, we know that pain is bad, not only for us, but bad objectively.
Yeah, I'm just stating to you, if I am correct that the other human beings and the other animals have a brain that is similar to my own, and it's functioning in the same manner, and it's creating a reward and punishment inside of my brain, it's quite clear that, yes, if that is correct, that I'm not special, you know, then yes, I have nothing else to conclude. And again, the testimony of 99% of humans on Earth is that, yes, if given the choice, they'll take the cupcake, not the nail in their eye. I mean, I shouldn't even say 99, but the guy say 99.99999. You have to get all the way to some belligerent flat earther or something before you're going to have somebody who's going to raise their hand and say, no, I want the nail in my eye.
However, strangely, he doesn't draw the same conclusion for pleasure. He doesn't...
I don't know what conclusion I'm supposed to draw. It's sort of a different subject, right? You're saying this is how much pain there is. I'm saying pain is real. Bad is real. The currency you're paying. What you're paying for a product is real, the cash. You're saying the product I'm buying, which is some little trinket of fun, is worth the price being paid for it. My argument is that, no, if I add up the worst of the worst, and then I have the best of the best, there's no way that the best pays for the worst. There's just no way. It's a bargain. It's a terrible ripoff, and I want my money back, so to speak. It was a waste of investment.
I believe from direct experience that pleasure is good for us, or that it is good objectively. But that's another...
My point is that the feelings are real. Now, whether the value, it's just a fact that value is relative. And the fact is that most of our pleasures are escapes from worse negatives. Anytime we rise a little bit in the quicksand, we feel better. We recognize the improvement in our condition. But if I put you in that condition from being, without you being in quicksand, you're not going to think, oh, I'm doing so much better. Okay, so it's all relative in the sense that you still have to recognize that on the continuum there is bad and good, but what their actual capacity is to compensate for each other is another conversation.
Thing, but he thinks, you know, he just appeals to direct experience.
Appeals to direct experience. I mean, again, can't be slighted as some stupid thing. The fact is that people who falsely testify regarding their direct experience are usually people who are lying. Okay, their false testimony isn't a mistake; it's an overt lie. Okay, so you know, recognize that first. There isn't all that many true accidents of memory. There's people who try to pretend they were there when they weren't even there, or they pretend they were watching when they weren't watching.
He conflates the ability to see a difference between pain and pleasure with the belief that pain is objectively bad.
No, that's not what I'm conflating. So there's no conflation. There's two subjects. And the fact is that, yes, the word bad's entire invention is dependent on a human being having a bad experience. If the human being doesn't have the bad experience, we never invent the word bad, because there can't be any outcome that is better or worse. So again, this is ought thing just comes out of the fact that the outcomes have a different character, and we can measure the character of the outcomes based on how many people are, you know, half dead lying on a battlefield, for example.
Okay, so this is just pure illogic.
So there's nothing illogical about us using our senses, experiencing, tasting, testing. That's all it is. It's testing. Consciousness is testing the environment. And the meter has a dial and it reads. And we can just read the meter. The meter's reading a number and I can read it. So he's calling that not science, when that's exactly what science is. So, wrong again. Yeah, little pause. All right, continuing. Let's see. Well, we'll just play it from here for a minute.
There's no logic to that. It's not an argument. It's just a rather bizarre leap.
All right, so there's just no other way. There's no other way for what I experience to be seen other than my testimony. That's all there is. And again, 99% of human beings, if I give them a survey, are going to answer the questions exactly how I'm going to answer them regarding the value of their personal experience. So again, it's you that are in denial of the fact that these things are actually happening to the creatures on this planet. The creatures on this planet, the sentient brain-enabled organisms, are having a quality of experience. And there are decided experiences that are decidedly negative and unpleasant and awful and not worth ever experiencing again. And it's a fact, not a fable. And it's a fact you're denying for no good reason but to be just a naysayer. Yeah. Play a little word game.
Okay, it's not the same as pain and pleasure. Those are also linked to action. There's motivation, and from motivation we get pain and pleasure.
These are motivations, or again, just more incentive. They're just giving you the smell of it, so to speak, the sight of it, you know, the side boob, something, you know, that catches the interest and, you know, propels the organism into a deeper and deeper interaction with the stimulus that will produce in routinely produces gratification. Nothing surprising there either.
And also motivation then gets attached to ideas of what is good or bad, and that's that.
No, those are all just inhibitors. So the ideas are just qualifiers placed on the impulses, the desires. So we can have a desire and we know, well, we can't rape and we can't take and we can't steal and we can't do this and we can't do that. So the inhibitions give us notice that we will violate a code of conduct and we will become evil if we take what we want or desire. If we attempt to indulge our appetite by eating somebody else's potato chips.
That's value. And again, I'll point to that essay on what is value rather than trying to explain it all here.
Oh, so just too silly. So he has to write an essay. He has a 4-hour and 51-minute video and he can't get to it. It's just too nonsensical. All right, let's jump ahead. There's nothing there.
You believe, you know, your assumptions, the things you've never questioned, they might not be the ultimate frame.
Yeah. I mean, if up for you is left, you know, we're not going to be oriented correctly.
Right. So I've made a point over and over again. What conversation can we possibly have when the most important fact relevant to any subject, any context of having any conversation about value, you're denying. So obviously you can't understand value if you can't understand that the sentient organism's capacity to experience is where all value originates. If you don't understand that, then we have nothing to really talk about. And it's not a dogma I'm stating. It's my personal experience. I can't deny my personal experience with sensation. And the sensations are undeniably horrible and less horrible. You know, good, nice, better, an improvement.
So when we have conversations about things falling in gravity, we're just not going to understand each other.
Well, yeah, we're not going to understand each other if you think that left and right are absolute directions, and then you're trying to tell somebody...
Well, yeah, so if you don't even believe in left and right, then we're really in trouble, right? So he did, not only does he not believe in brains and their manifestation of sentient experience, he has some problem thinking that's a material happening in the universe. You know, your brain functioning and producing a sensation is somehow not a real thing. He doesn't think there's left and right. Jesus Christ.
He's walking toward you, where to go. You tell him, go to the left.
Yeah, it has rules. I mean, everything has, every word has contextual rules, and everybody knows those are the rules of the word, okay? Is that, yeah, my left is your right if you're facing me, so that's not very complicated. I think most people can handle that. You know, and if you're coming in sideways, your left and right is up and down. Not all that complicated, really. I mean, there's only three dimensions to fuck up. You know, how much of a mess can you make?
And they're going to go to what you consider to be the right. And you're going to say, no, I said left.
So I said word games. This, you can't get any more obvious just playing word games. That somehow we're supposed to have more exact language. So we're all supposed to say, well, there's an absolute 0 degree position. And let's just assign that as always being... the North Star or something. All right, and then we'll have to always, whenever we're navigating and talking to each other, we'll just talk about radians of degrees off of that center. I mean, it's too ridiculous. No, we have a shorthand language. People do understand each other. It really isn't that big a deal.
So, yeah, it's not going to work unless you understand that these are subject-relative directions.
No, they're not, okay? Because we're using them in an absolute sense of we understand each other's orientations, and you can do the conversion. So when I say a pound, you can figure out, oh, I'm in Europe, so that's 2.4 kilograms or 3 kilograms. You can figure that out the other way around, really. 2.3 pounds is 1 kilogram. Yeah, we can do the conversion. It's not a big deal.
That would just be a waste of time.
Yeah, we're not having an argument about how black isn't black.
Yeah, we are. So there's no point. This is exactly what we're having an argument about. So this is ridiculous. There's no other feature of sensation. The most dramatic feature of sensation is its qualia, all right? The value attached to it, the pleasurability of it. The sensual desirability, the sensual ease with which you have the experience. And most humans can say words like, it tastes bad, and that's good enough. You don't need to say anything more than that. It smells bad, it tastes bad. We don't need more than that. We all agree. Like a rotting corpse. Your logic stinks.
But it exists as an assumption in his thought. He thinks, well, my brain's not a special brain. That just proves that my brain is equally important. And he doesn't even think about what it means for something to be special.
I don't think it means anything in this context. The only thing that makes something worthy of our concern is the fact that it can feel. Everything else doesn't matter. So if the brain functions and it has sensations and the sensations are capable of going to horrible extremes, then I have to respect that. And I can't ever pretend that if I'm going to impose that pain, that I don't have to in some way account for doing it, that I don't have to justify it by having a mission worthy of causing the pain. And, you know, satisfying my appetite isn't a purpose or a function worthy of causing an organism suffering.
Or important, right? That these are value judgments and they don't exist in the cosmos. They don't exist.
And nothing exists in the cosmos in terms of a reasonable thought, okay? The cosmos doesn't have a brain. Now, if there was a brain in the cosmos, you know, if we could say the moon was the universe's brain, and there were, you know, bazillions of neurons, and the moon was really smart, then we could just go ask the moon, okay? But we can't. There's no intelligence anywhere accessible that's smarter than we are. There's no one better qualified to answer the question than we are. And it's just idiotic for morons like you to go looking through the universe to see what the universe says. Because, yeah, the universe isn't smart enough to say anything.
Outside of a context in which values are defined, right? They might exist in a society. You know, I'm not a special person in society. I don't have any special rights. But you're always special to yourself. You know, you're...
That's baby talk, so... I don't know what piece of logic would mean that where that could mean anything to me except as an excuse to somehow think my feelings, because I have them and they're mine, that somehow they're more important than somebody else's. No, they're not. Just a fact. It's a brain having experience. That's all that matters. And frankly, that's all the numbers that are in this mathematical set. There's no other numbers in this mathematical set except for these numbers produced by sentient brains having experiences. I can't make any of the numbers special.
Value judgments are about you. And if Amendum, you know, if the doctor said, Amendum, you have a brain tumor, I'm sure he'd be much more concerned than if he just read something in the news.
Again, and what does that have to do with that's not logic or reasoning. That's your subjective bias. So of course I'm going to be more concerned because I'm a selfish cunt. That has nothing to do with logic and reasoning. That has nothing to do with the intelligent dissection of this organism. I mean, some people would see blood and they'd faint. You know, they can't even see the blood of an organism. But the point is you're dissecting a truth here, all right? And it doesn't really have anything to do with your personal interest. And we know that our personal interest is powerful and strong. And it always gets in the way, frankly. It always makes a mess. It's not smart. It's cruel, selfish, and poorly motivates us.
Newspaper about a random person who has a brain tumor, because you're special to yourself. Then there's no way around.
Well, so whatever that baby talk is, again, what does that have to do with it? Yes, I concede we're selfish. So what? What does that have to do with our capacity to think? All right, and to understand the truth. I mean, do I really have to provide examples? I mean, all the examples where, you know, you would know better, you want something and you know better and you don't do it because you know that it won't work, that it will cost somebody else too much. I mean, come on, that's just ridiculous. Ugh, well, that was bad. I mean, defending self-interest is like defending God. I mean, that's just too ridiculous. Our selfish motivations are a liability. They're not anything to do with us being smart. That has to do with us being scheming organisms. That has to do with our primitive past, not our intelligent future.
Of a, you know, a purposeful universe and a benevolent God.
No, he's not saying that at all. He's just pointing out that there's no place to say that we have a good reason to think it makes any sense or it has value or it's worth preserving because there was somebody who built this little piece of art.
Why would that make it worth preserving? Or why would that make it mean something to us? Like, let's say that the universe was created by a god, and God wants it this way, and he set it up this way. It was all, you know, part of it.
Well, that would just be an appeal to authority thing. Like, if somebody beats the crap out of you, okay, you end up having to concede he won the election, so to speak. That's like losing in a democracy. You lost the election. Okay, so you got to concede. If there was some being that had all of these special powers, there isn't much you could do except concede to his power. I mean, you don't have to bow to it, but I'm just saying you're going to have to do whatever he says because he'll kill you otherwise. You know, that kind of thing. There's a point where you have to give on to Rome what is Rome's, you know, give on to Caesar what is Caesar's. You really just don't have a choice. But we're not in that circumstance, are we? No, we're not.
His plan to, you know, do whatever. It still could seem pointless from our perspective, right? Because we'd be making the judgment from our perspective. Just so even if there was a cosmic...
Yes, let's say there was a god, and I asked the god, well, isn't it preposterously idiotic to punish children for the crimes of the parent? And if he doesn't have a very good answer, like, I can't even imagine... I mean, it's a good answer would have to be, shit, is that what I did? Oh, my fuck, god damn it. You know, maybe he can say, no, they totally misquoted me. I never meant to imply you do that, okay? I wasn't Adam. It wasn't, I didn't curse all women because of Eve, and I didn't do any of that stuff. That's all just stories they tell. You know, what would the excuse be? He obviously doesn't have any ethics. You know, it's okay to rape women as long as you marry them. I mean, you know, really... dopey stuff that's in the Bible. I mean, obviously the God would have to have a pretty damn good explanation for something that stupid. I mean, why bother writing in stone a bunch of Ten Commandments when you should have just written the part where you said, do unto others as you have others do unto you? Because that covers it all. You know, frankly, that's it. So simple and easy to figure out. What do I want to have happen to me? Okay, if I'm making something I don't want happen to me happen to somebody else, then I guess I'm fucking up. That's not tough at all.
The deity and set it all up to do something, we could still say, well, we don't want to do that. That's not what we want to do. We'd be making judgments from our own perspective. And I'm sure that if there was a cosmic deity that set it all up and said, oh, don't worry, Amendum, it's all for a good cause... this is how I masturbate. I made this thing so I could, you know, jerk off.
Obviously, that wouldn't be a very good explanation, would it? So that wouldn't be a very good answer to torture. And so, yeah, I would be out to get the god. You know, I'd try to pull his plug, so to speak. I'd be a terrorist.
And it would say, that's tyranny. That's horrible. We must destroy this evil god. Right, so it wouldn't make any difference whether there was a deity or not. You'd still be judging his creation from your perspective.
Again, yes, of course. I'm going to use my senses and my reasoning power to judge the environment I exist in. And if I see it having an excessive blood footprint, so to speak, if I see it brick walling, if I see it wasting torture... I'm going to say, I'm not for wasting torture, so let's change course or sink the boat. You know, fuck this. Let's quit going on vacations if we can't do it better than this.
Okay, it's not, there's no reason to believe it's something worth saving or preserving or bowing to. Or in any way revering, or in any way...
So let's think, this is in the context, you know, there have been a few Christians that have, you know, vocal and ones, that have conceded that if they found out for real, like somebody was able to prove to them there was no God, they would be suicidal, they would be despondent, they would be heartbroken over the tragedy of what has been paid for this squalor existence. They would be quite dissatisfied with this outcome.
saying it has intrinsic function because it was made by something capable of producing something with intrinsic function.
Okay, so Menem thinks there's no intrinsic function or intrinsic purpose to the universe, but he also believes that it has this negative purpose.
Ah, bullshit. So again, lie. It doesn't have any negative purpose. I just made the simple point that if you don't engineer something, it won't work. So I can just put a log across a stream, right? And the log will spin or it'll do something. I'll fall in the water. All right. The bridge has to be better engineered. The fact is, if you're going to make something good in the world, it has to be engineered with the function in mind. All right. And the nature can't do that. So when nature makes something, it doesn't have any standards for function besides an outcome. It doesn't care how much torture it mixes in the ingredients. It doesn't care about the failure as long as the failures mean for the glory of the DNA molecule. As long as the DNA molecule is glorified, that is, the 10,000 dead baby sea turtles are an acceptable price in nature's mind, quote unquote, for the one mature turtle, that gets his rocks off.
That there is a cosmic purpose to minimize suffering. So he recognizes the absence of value in one direction, but not the other.
It's more nonsense. I am simply pointing out that there is no capacity to create something good, because good actually has to be engineered. You have to have a brain to make it. You can't cook that recipe without tools and ingredients.
He recognizes that there's no, positive purpose, there's no constructive purpose, or no good purpose, you could say, nothing accomplished by the universe. But then he doesn't understand that also implies there's nothing being harmed by the existence.
No, that's a lie. So obviously I'm not conceding that nothing's being harmed, so that's just idiotic. This is like somebody, you have a goldfish and you're going to go on vacation for a week and now somebody has to take care of your goldfish. Are you going to let your toaster do it? What are you going to let take care of the goldfish? Something that understands how to do it or something that doesn't understand how to do it? Huge difference. Nature doesn't understand how to do anything. So it can't do anything good. Because good always requires understanding the danger of the bad. All right, we'll jump ahead a little.
He doesn't know what I'm saying, and he is an incoherent idiot.
And I hope he's not going to say epigenetics or some kind of other crap. It's against, that's just error code. It's all error code. Okay, the whole thing runs on the fact that nature breaks it and remakes it. Okay, it doesn't have anything to do with anything positive in terms of the evolution. The evolution is just making a gladiator of the day.
See, he can't even think about evolution just in abstract terms without these...
Why would I think of it in abstract terms? So again, what's the point of thinking about something so substantive, real? Why would I think of it abstractly? Why would I put it in an abstract term? it's no need to. It's so fundamental in terms of how the process works. It's a Xerox machine, and the idea is that the Xerox makes errors, and some of the errors make the picture look better. not complicated. But you waste a lot of paper.
Value judgments built into the rhetoric. He can't just understand biology and evolution as it is for what it is. He has to judge it. He has to put value.
Nonsense. So, obviously, if value is here, if sentience is here, it's creating value, why wouldn't I pay attention to where the dam is leaking? it's just idiotic, right? I have a dam. I'm holding back water. I understand the concept. It's positive if it's dry on this side and wet on that side. That's function. And so I'm just saying, yes, the idea here is to have as little water leaking out of the damn thing as possible, to have as little waste. Don't waste any suffering. So for every bit of suffering you cause, there should be some benefit in preventing even more suffering. Kind of obviously in a negative utilitarian sort of way, you want to guarantee, okay, that you've done something good by creating bigger amounts of unexperienced bad.
Judgments into it. He has to call it a gladiator war or say it's error code.
So he says that he doesn't, I can't abstract, and here those metaphors and analogies are an abstraction, you know, in a sense. So he says, I'm not capable of abstracting. Then he points out how, I make these analogies to things that are just as mechanical and basically function in exactly the same way, where you could understand that all you're really doing over the time of evolution is, you know, you go from suits of armor, you know, to, you know, more, you know, hardened steeled weapons, and then you start bringing guns and bullets into it, and then you have to have Kevlar. This is the evolution of the weapons, but the war doesn't change.
You know, he can't just say mutation, he has to say error. Right. I mean, yeah.
That's what it is. So, Jesus, it's essential to the function. The thing can't function if it doesn't make those mistakes. Those mistakes are critical to the incidental happy accidents that create some feature that will give the organism a greater capacity to defeat its enemies and, you know, whether on their side or, you know, defeat whatever the enemy is to its genetic code, whatever's suppressing its taking over of the world.
Call it a copying error, yeah, and then sometimes that's selected for, right? But anyway, it's just, you know, it's why he can't understand anything, because he can't think abstractly. He can only think in metaphors, and he imports all of his assumptions and all of his
So it's kind of bizarre, right? So metaphors and analogies are language, frankly. That's all language is. Every word is defined through the use of other words. All right. And all the words have a sensible origin, okay? Wet, for example. You know, obviously, the first example was rain or water, okay? Something got wet, and when something was wet, you could call it something. And that's how the word was invented. So it's a pretty secure word, what wet is. All right. And all the rest of the words are just made out of those definitions. And our language is quite sensible and useful. And, you know, again, these people, you know, playing their games with those words, trying to pretend the language isn't explicit enough, when, no, it's quite explicit. Good and bad are perfectly useful words. Positive and negative, perfectly useful.
So the effect of the oak tree, okay, and that cycle is how purpose emerges out of causality.
All right, well, let's see what that was, because that just sounds too ridiculous. Purpose emerges out of causality. So he's just saying, let nature be your guide. Something like that. I mean, it's just too silly. Because nature did it, it's what we should do. Nature kills children, so we should kill children. Millions of them. You know.
Inheriting the membrane, and they're inheriting the entire structure, all of the proteins, all of the chemical pathways, all of that stuff.
And all of that stuff can't do anything to benefit you. You cannot possibly change any of that through your experience except to break it. So all you can do is damage sperm or damage eggs. You can't improve them. Not possible.
Is copied during cell replication. Okay, and that's the point, and it's not super important here, but that's the point.
It's one of the facts that gets distorted by people who want to try to silver lining or try to pretend that somehow our behavior can be can build better eggs and sperm and make the world a better place that way. No, you can't do it that way.
Ant and Venom is just babbling.
Technically, but whatever, there's processes, okay, that exist, okay, a mechanism, and the whole mechanism is just transferred.
Yeah, that's right, and then the whole mechanism is transferred. Yeah, that's the point. The mechanism.
Yeah, the only part that's doing the replicating, as in pointed out by the self, you know, Dawkins' book, The Selfish Gene, is the little tiny bits on the chromosomes, little pieces of the code. They're really in the survival game. And that's why they end up becoming redundant on the, that's why we have so much redundant code. It's because, yeah, they're all fighting to take over the gene also. But whatever. It's really, all the other stuff is superfluous in the sense that doesn't evolve. That's why it's all so primitive. Sperm cells don't evolve. You know, I mean, they're all basically the same because they really can't do much evolving in terms of their struggle. Their struggle can't be inherited. Their story can't be inherited. The only thing that can be inherited is something that happened to the person before he made the sperm. Okay, that's the only changes that can have any effect. Anything that happens while the egg or the sperm is struggling to complete its mission, all of that can only be negative. You can only damage them. You can't do anything to improve them. They can't carry with them, "This guy knows how to count to four." They can't carry that knowledge with them.
Mechanism is copied, and that mechanism includes DNA, but it's not just DNA that is replicated, and reproduction is not just copying DNA.
Evolution is. That's the point. Evolution is just copying DNA. But anyway. Let's just play it from here.
That's the fucking point.
No, it isn't any fucking point. And how is it relevant anyway? Again, you want to have an argument about abiogenesis and, evolution, and you're going to say that has something to do with this value argument? It doesn't have a damn thing to do with any of it. You think nature knows what it's doing? Is that your argument? That there's something inherently wise in its function? So you are a God-botherer of some kind? What the fuck is your argument?
Idiot.
Fucked hard.
Anyway, I just want to make that point. It's not just about DNA. DNA is part of the system, and the entire system replicates itself. But anyway,
it's really not true, but okay. They just, okay, it doesn't replicate. It gives it a half of its soup. So it's like sour bread dough or something. It doesn't make its own sour bread, bacteria. It just infects another pile of dough.
And that quibble, yes, biology is a loop. It's a reproduction loop, and that cycle of reproduction bootstraps value out of physics. There's no value in physics.
Okay, so whatever that is.
Who the fuck could make anything out of that? It bootstraps the value out of physics. So again, what does this have to do with anything? I mean, obviously, the tool of sensation is one place in evolution, whatever it was, 300, 500 million years ago, something went ouch. And now the evolution had this tool to use as an internal function in the brain to create this incentive mechanism. What does the evolution have to do with the fact that it's just another tool? It just, yes, it makes organisms capable of learning. It makes organisms capable of doing lots of things that may be very beneficial to their adaptability. But it's just a tool.
Bootstraps it into value. So there's no value when there's paramecium's running around.
Well, so here in Mendham is not understanding what I'm saying because he can only think within his frame in which value is, defined by feelings. And so value is only defined by sentience.
I don't know what else it could possibly be assigned to. What else should I be concerned for than sentient things? So if something's not sentient, why should I be concerned for its welfare? And the only way I could possibly care is if it was a vial full of penicillin. I could say, well, gee, that could relieve people of pain, so it has some use value, but it doesn't have any intrinsic value. It itself doesn't need to be worried about.
But I'm talking about biological value, right? There is something that is good for an oak tree, and there are some things that are bad for an oak tree. If you cut down the oak tree, you are harming the oak tree.
Not if you cut it down 3 days before it was going to die anyway. So, the logic. Why should we be concerned about organisms that don't have any sentient experience? Why would I think a growing crystal, you know, a salt crystal, wants to grow? You could say just as much as a tree wants to grow. What's the difference between the salt crystal and the tree? I mean, both of them are brainless. Why should I think the tree needs to live, okay, more than the salt crystal needs to grow?
If you give it water and sunlight and soil nutrients and you fertilize it, you're helping the oak tree, right? So
I just have to go, blow my brains out. What the fuck is you? Again, why would I concern myself with a non brain enabled organism? There's zero evidence that anything else can manifest consciousness. I mean, I shouldn't have to go through all the physical facts that we've figured out. You know, you can scratch little pieces of our brain and make gigantic changes to our conscious experience. It's clear the consciousness is inside of a brain. It's not inside my fingers. It's not, I mean, obviously the neurons of the brain go into my fingers. It has tentacles that go into other hunks of flesh, but it's the brain, the neurons, that are creating the manifestation that I'm concerned about. I'm not concerned about manifestations that don't have something to do with sensing, okay? Sensation. All right, so kind of a strange turn. I mean, I really didn't see him going to some place where you would try to make an argument that all of these, especially after I said the word paramecium, that all these biological organisms are somehow feeling. Like the genetic code itself is a feeling thing. Like a virus is a feeling thing. Like anything that has connected to biology is somehow feel. Like my liver feels, quote unquote, that it has a welfare, that I should be concerned with its happiness. It's just nonsense. Silly. Nonsense. A dead liver, a living liver. Neither one of them is worthy of a tear.
Organisms have purposes, and their purpose.
Oh well, I don't even want to. There's no. So again, he is making nature God, and he's somehow saying there's some purpose to this specific manifestation of evolution. So I just change one asteroid impact and I change what happens on planet Earth, you know, in terms of what evolved here. And so if humans never got language, he would, you know, think that there's just so much important purpose going on, you know, with all the little animals squeaking about, that it's all somehow creating some purpose value that's just radiating from the Earth, all this purpose value, because there's a bunch of organisms eating each other. And, well, nature just sees that as so functional or something. I don't know. Like I said, this is a god without a god. You know, it's hell with no creator.
Emerged by the cycle of reproduction. It emerged by evolution, because evolution created reproducing machines, things that do something.
And obviously the whole argument is about the distinction between the machines that have a brain and the ones that don't. And just as there's a cavern of value difference between your good feelings and your bad feelings, there's a cavern of real difference between a feeling thing and a non-feeling thing. Cavern of difference.
That have a purpose, that are best described in terms of what they do, not in terms of their prior causes, but in terms of their function or purpose.
So again, more nonsense about the tree having a purpose. It doesn't know its purpose, obviously. And it could, you know, its purpose is to kill other things that might want to grow where it's growing. What's the value in that? What's the beauty of that? It's choking children, starving little seeds.
Okay, so yeah, purpose emerged with biology.
Whatever that is. So that's just a nonsense, okay? And I think, again, for most people, they're not going to associate the word purpose to things that neither have volition or any capacity to understand intent or that there'd be a function. So no thing knows it has a purpose. Buildings don't think, oh, I'm a building and my purpose is to house humans. And no. People don't think so.
And purpose exists for non-sentient beings.
So whatever that nonsense is, it just doesn't mean a damn thing. There's some sort of purpose in a crystal growing in a cave 5 miles underground. The stalagmite, you know, growing a little tiny millimeter every 10 years kind of thing. And there's some purpose. No, there isn't. There's just a function, and it's a meaningless, dead function.
Bacterium has a purpose. An oak tree has a purpose.
All right, so I don't even know what this preaching is. Jesus walked on the water. Jesus was God. Blah, blah, blah. The bush was a burning. Whatever. The fish were a multiplying. The wine was a pouring. Whatever. Blah, 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 blah.
Purpose. And that's biological value. And then,
So that's his value. So that's really the big, you know, this not funny joke of this whole conversation is I didn't think he was this stupid. So he really is. He's bowing to the totem pole of nature and saying that somehow if nature done it, it must function. And therefore, because it functions, because it played a role in a game and it outsurvived something, therefore it should be and it should win, or some kind of crap like that. Like there's any oughts in that nonsense. Because there is no is there. There's no parameciums are sentient, therefore parameciums is, their welfare is important. No, there's no such thing here.
Psychological value or sentience, which we could say there.
So again, it calls it psychological value. Sentience isn't psychological, it's physiological. Okay, and there's just no point in describing it as something other than electricity or, you know, neurons and synapses. But, you know, frankly, that arrangement of electricity has a qualia. It's just a fact as I'm experiencing it. So I know it happens. I know the brain can manifest it. So there's no, in my opinion, I'm not going to argue those facts. It's a materialistic, material function that takes place in my brain that creates a perception. My brain does a specific thing to create a specific state of my being.
They're kind of the same thing, although maybe not necessarily equivalent. That evolved much later, and it evolved as a way to
So again, he says much later than what? So when do you say the first ouch took place? I mean, obviously it was after the first neuron, but, and when's the first neuron? I mean, you want to go back and look at the electric eel, for example. Pretty old fish, frankly. So been around long, 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 long time.
Generate behavior that was instrumental to biological purpose, right? So even though, yeah, we make value judgments and we have feelings of pain and pleasure, those things are evolved mechanisms or evolved properties.
So we know our intelligence doesn't evolve. We have to go out and get it, all right? You have to go to school to get your intelligence. So that's just absolute nonsense. And clearly it's completely dependent on what kind of education you're given, right? So in the Muslim world, they're given a fucktarded understanding of reality, and they end up being fucktards because they're not given the facts. It's not because their brain can't work, it's because their brain is being fed garbage. Okay, so it's like a computer. You got to have a decent operating system or the fucking thing isn't very useful. And so it has nothing to do with evolution. Your intelligence isn't evolving. It isn't have anything to do with the biological function of the machine. The software is completely different than the hardware.
Right? And they evolved to make us reproduce. Right? So that's the point, that there is biological value that comes into existence, that is bootstrapped into existence by...
All right, so whatever biological value would be. So again, I can't understand that as a concept. I don't know what it means. My big toe has value. The nail on my big toe has value. I have to worry about my big toe because it's not necessarily doing what it wants to do. You know, born free. You know, it wants to be free. What the fuck? It doesn't want to be tied to my foot. You know, it's what a pile of crap.
The cycle of reproduction. Because now you have things whose cause is also their effect. The acorn is the cause of the oak tree, and the acorn is also the effect of the oak tree.
Okay. So that's absolutely meaningless mush, again. So what? So there's a cycle. So what? That doesn't mean anything. Yeah. What does it mean? That means that all of a sudden I got to worry about oak trees. No, it doesn't mean I have to worry about oak trees. Because oak trees don't have a brain. They can't have a conscious bad experience. They can't be tortured. They can't be put in hell. They can't experience bad. So I don't need to bother thinking about their welfare, whatever that would be, because they don't have one.
And that cycle is how purpose emerges out of causality.
So let's understand that evolution can make all kinds of little robots and all kinds of monsters, and it couldn't mean a fucking thing to a rational human being because there's absolutely no welfare stake involved whatsoever.
Right, so the robots just couldn't matter. The ones without a brain, it just couldn't matter. Just idiotic. I mean, I could make this, you know, I could take a bunch of nanotechnology and I could make this little eyeball move and I can make it simulate, you know, a human eye. Not a human eye. Okay, so, you know, doesn't have anything to do with being alive in the sense of sentient and conscious. So you really do have to make that distinction. Let's understand these organisms are not what we are. We're made out of living things. We're a colony of living things, hundreds of billions of them, that have been enslaved to create this monster, this super robot, this transformer, if you like. We're made out of life. We're not alive. Yeah. I mean, that's the irony of it. The word life, yes, our vocabulary does fail because our vocabulary doesn't make a distinction between the living things that are unconscious and the living things that are conscious. And that's a huge distinction.
It's just as if it was just boulders falling down a hill.
Well, that's your assumption, but they're not like boulders rolling down a hill.
No, it's not an assumption. It's a deduction, okay? And it is exactly like boulders rolling down a hill. It's just a mechanical circumstance, as you just described. Cause and effect circular, okay? The ground got elevated by the plates crushing into each other, and the gravity inevitably rolls it all back down flat again. So it's all part of some stupid cycle, but there's nothing to see there. Nothing of interest is happening because nothing feeling is involved.
An oak tree is not like a boulder that rolls down a hill and seeks the lowest energy state.
No, it's not seeking anything, so it gets more nonsense. It's being pushed by an active source of energy. It's in a field, okay, of imbalance, and it's being pushed by the imbalanced field. So you can't even get the physics right, but no surprise there.
Right? An oak tree is something that grows, you know, grows up toward the sun. It tries to get energy.
I'm really surprised that he spent such a big hunk of this video talking about how I should be interested in what oak trees are doing. Quite amazing, really. But, you know, it's just as, you know, you could, the fact is, if I looked at this stuff, this clay under a microscope, I'll find a whole bunch of things living in it, you know, a bunch of little organisms, but they're just little machines, and they don't feel, and they don't have brains, and they don't question, and they don't wonder, and they don't investigate, and they don't add 2 + 2, and they don't do any of that, and they certainly don't feel. They don't have a state where they're in a good place and a bad place as a state of mind. They don't have a state of mind. So there's nothing to worry about.
Energy from its environment, and it uses that energy to reproduce. So no, life forms are not just like rocks or stars or galaxies.
I'm sorry, it's all just physics. And frankly, yes, it's more complex, the chemistry. But I can make other proteins besides DNA that are very big molecules, very complex, and they just don't reproduce. You know, but it's just nonsense to say that because we have been created by millions of years of evolution has created a replicating machine that can make insanely complicated organisms doesn't in and of itself state a reason to say it has purpose or function. And that can only be figured out once you know what has value. And the fact is that we can figure out. And we can know non-brain-abled organisms can't be having a good or bad day. And so therefore we don't have to concern ourselves with their welfare. Our state.
They have purposes, okay, and they have a purpose because they evolved, that their form evolved to have an effect, and the effect is reproduction. And again, that's the cycle that creates biological value out of, you know, physical causality.
Can't mean anything. There's a point where you get to these processes, these mechanical processes, where you have something like consciousness.
Well, I hate to break it to you, Mendham, but consciousness is just another mechanical process.
Okay, so that's right there. That's the end of the subject, right? So that's a good point to land on. So he doesn't think there's any difference between this pen and my brain, that these are just atoms moving around in here, jiggling about in little compounds and chemistry, and this is just chemistry and compounds, and there's no difference. Nobody should see a difference. There's no value difference. So instead of me, it could be some, just take any generic internet picture of some 10-year-old kid, and he's basically dismissing its welfare and saying it doesn't matter. If you can do it to this, and it's ethical, you can do it to that, because there's no difference between these things. They're just, okay, they're physical atomic structure. It doesn't matter that one atomic structure creates a conscious sentient brain and one doesn't. That doesn't matter to him. Yeah, that's not relevant to the subject. And clearly it's the only relevant fact, that huge, gigantic difference in its competence and capacity to experience existence. All right. If it can't experience existence, it can't be harmed, then it doesn't need attention. All right. So, enough of a video. We might, I don't know. I mean, it's just, it is, you know, it's dumber than I thought, okay? So his incentive isn't just to be some kind of naysayer. His incentive is to be some sort of nature apologist. And that's really funny. You know, I mean, just because I don't think he relates very well to nature at all. I don't think if we could see him, you know, that we'd see somebody who looks like they were in tune with nature in any way whatsoever. All right, anyway. Asshole. It's just simple. The simple category that he falls into is asshole. All right. So enough of video. Till the next time and such and so forth. And whatnot. This has been a donotgod.com video presentation and such.